Hello, everyone, and welcome again to PWT Talks NXT. That's the name of the podcast that you're listening to here. And I've got all four of us here of the rotating crew. We're going to talk about our... Yes, see, we're enthused already. We're going to talk at length about the year in NXT. There was a little bit of original content on the show this week, and we'll briefly talk about that, but we're gonna give our awards, our oh-so-meaningful awards, to the stars and the great matches of NXT this year. We also have... Well, we'll get there. Let me introduce us. I'm Kelly Wells. I write the NXT Tracker. It is kind of a look at how the workers in NXT on a one-by-one in-depth basis are kind of coming along. I also have a piece that is already in the newsletter, but has yet to be on the site. It will be on the site later, which is an NXT depth chart. I went through every member of NXT, and I wrote you 10 pages of kind of where I think they sit right now in NXT, and that's something that I might be doing every 6 months to a year. But that's what I do, and I also host this show, so here I am. Tom, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, yes, Tom Staup, at Tom Staup on Twitter, and I do the NXT tapings reports for PW Torch, as well as covering the MLW events that have been happening here in Orlando lately. And here on the show, I will not get into spoilers, although that's not even going to be an issue for the next couple months, because the last round of tapings has all aired, and I'm not going to be able to go to the next two since they're in Atlanta.
All right. Well, yeah, branching out. So, Justin, you're next.
Hi, I'm Justin James, and I am the PW Torch TV specialist for NXT. I cover it every week.
All right. And Harley, go ahead and introduce yourself and let us in on the fun stuff you've got for us this week.
Yes. Hello. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I do the Ring of Honor weekly television reports for PW Torch. I am a longtime NXT viewer back to day one, and I'm also sort of the unofficial statistician of our group. So mixed in with our big year-end awards tonight, I will also be dropping in some fun stats, such as the best televised records in the past year and things like that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I'm a big spreadsheet guy. I have hundreds of them saved. I think a bad spreadsheet is better than a good almost anything else. So I'm a big fan. Big fan of Harley. Let's cover this this week's original content. Not a lot of it, but a few things. I want to start with what's most fresh in our heads, the little mini documentary we got on Ember Moon. Justin said what we were all thinking, so I'll let him start with this. So, Justin, get us started.
Yeah, that really was a package that needed to happen about a year ago. I think it erased a lot of the damage that they did to her over the year with those, you know, what I've been calling the sad sack Olympic gold medal she won earlier this year. I really liked the package. It reminded me a lot of the Roderick Strong piece. It ended well. I just thought it was a really good package. And as we discussed a week or two ago on this podcast, I think if they had packages like that for everybody, it would be fantastic.
Yeah, it really humanized her. And we were going kind of, and we didn't go to Papa Shango levels, but we were definitely going with mysticism at first. And so it was like, who is she really? And I think this did a good job of that. I loved the stuff from the Performance Center. I'm a real sucker for seeing people get hired, like talk about the moment that they got hired. I just think it's just awesome to hear about people living their dreams. Tom, anything else on the Ember?
Yeah, I you know, Justin pretty much covered it, although I will add that I feel like stripping away the mystery is not a disadvantage here at all. I know we discussed this off air a little bit, but the whole The Myth Rises thing, like, that's cool if you really want to flesh it out and give her a backstory and everything, but it was just sort of something they said about her, and she wears the hood when she comes out, but there was really no narrative to go along with it, so I am more than okay with learning more about who the actual person is, and I feel like this probably did the most to get Ember over with me than anything she's done in the ring so far.
Yeah, this is not a NXT is not a place where you're going to see Ember's compound and Sister Abigail and things like that. They're not going to use TV time for that. So you might as well humanize her while she's here. Anything else, Harley?
Yeah, the only thing that I would add on to all of what you guys said is I think the key here going forward is she needs a strong villain to work against. Not Peyton Royce and Billie Kay. Somebody who actually wins matches. Somebody who's actually a threat to her. And I'm worried that they're going to put her up against people like Nikki Cross, people like Kairi Sane, and that's just going to hurt her more. She definitely needs someone that we can really hate to push her up even more so as the top hero in this division.
Yeah,
Shayna Baszler.
Yeah, right. We've got Shayna on the horizon. And Wade and I, when we did the podcast, Wade and Justin and I, a few weeks ago, we talked about the possibility of Ember having to go heel here, but I think this little documentary showed that they have absolutely zero plans to do that. So the strong heels are going to be important, and I think they can go either way with Bianca Belair. Bianca is really cool, so she's going to have a hard time getting booed by some, but I think that she can be a natural heel. So maybe down the road, that's somebody she can work with. But I don't want to belabor the point there. Let's get to, that goes pretty well into the women's segment. They talked about, hey, the women's segment, the women's division in NXT is more exciting than it's been in a long time. And, that's a little bit of an overstatement. But I feel like they've got some talent there that's untapped, and I feel like they can do a few things. The one thing that made me laugh about this segment is in that piece I just wrote, I put together that roster depth chart. I had Lacey Evans pretty low, and I said, I don't even know what Lacey Evans is supposed to be. She comes out with this, like, bombastic, kind of overwrought, flag-waving sort of gear, but then she has this sultry, like, bad girl song that doesn't seem to jive with what she's doing. Like, I didn't get her. So when she got some mic time, I was like, sweet. They're going to flesh out her character. And what she said was, I represent what women everywhere are fighting for. I was like, what the hell does that mean? That, like, you literally just could have said, I am a baby face. Like that's literally the only thing that it said. It's like, as long as there are no follow-up questions, I'm on your side, and I agree with whatever you agree with. So I thought that was kind of funny. But anything on this women's segment, are you guys bullish about the women's division right now?
I'm excited about the potential. Like, that's the thing. A lot of the women in the package we saw in the Mae Young tournament, we haven't seen very much on NXT television to date. Maybe one or two appearances here or there. But I'm definitely looking forward. Like, I can't wait for Bianca Belair, Dakota Kai, people like that to start being on television regularly, and we can hopefully get 2, 3, maybe even more feuds going at one time.
Right. I'm glad they didn't saturate it too much. I mean, obviously the jump from NXT straight to Raw and SmackDown, like, they got that. I mean, that was a lot of people at once to try to wrap your head around on the main roster. But I'm glad we didn't saturate NXT by saying, hey, here's 15 more wrestlers. And it's like, whoa, you can't get them all over at once. Let's slow burn this. Tom, anything on the women's division?
Oh, for sure. After the Mae Young, and I'll be really repetitive about this, say it almost every episode, I'm just so excited about the future of the women's division in NXT and what that could mean for WWE. And, you mentioned Dakota Kai, Bianca Belair, and we've also got Abby Lath, Zia Lee, Zeta, just to name a few that popped to mind immediately. Yeah. I mentioned it Ripley on the last episode I was on. And then there's some even like Kavita DeVee. Was making a lot of waves with her match with YouTube hits, and I know she's signed, but we haven't really seen much from her. So there's a lot that they can draw from right now. I would add Jazzy Gabbert to the list. I was right there with everybody else, going absolutely losing my mind when she appeared in the Mae Young Classic. She was incredible, but as you guys may have heard, she had some a herniated disc in her neck after they detected it after they signed her and had to rescind the contract. So she's going to doctors right now. But
Yeah,
she just revealed it on the Edge and Christian podcast. It was an excellent interview that I would recommend to anyone, even if you haven't heard of Jazzy Gabbert. But hopefully that's not the end for her. She's seeing doctors right now. But anyway, to get off of that tangent, yeah, I'm just really excited about the depth that they have to draw from right now. And there are more women that I am excited about right now than not. So, yeah, my hopes are high.
All right, great. Justin, any one or two names that really stick out to you as people you're looking forward to seeing?
Not really. For me, they've got so much good stuff waiting in the wings, but they haven't developed it, right? So you're waiting to see where this is going. Shayna Baszler, interested to see where they take her. She looks like she's got all the potential to be a good fit on this roster and do something special here. But again, I'd like to see where they go with some of this stuff.
All right. Sounds good. So yeah, women, we like them. They're cool. we got a little bit of hype for returning wrestlers. TM61, I mean, that's going to be a big boon. I know that they're going to be able to work some really, really good matches with, I still want to say Red Dragon, Fish and O'Reilly. So that should be good. I hope they get a little bit more. They were just basically introduced as really good wrestlers when they were introduced last time. They didn't give them a whole lot of character, and I hope we see a little bit more of that. And it said a special look at TM61 coming in a couple weeks, so hopefully we'll get that. And they really hammered home the Ciampa storyline in a way that felt like it's got to be close. Do you guys agree with that, Justin?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It really does feel like they're getting ready for his return.
Right. Tom.
Couldn't be happier.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to this. And we'll get there. I know we'll talk more about that particular feud. Tom?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're just going to keep on watching that entrance ramp. And the question becomes more about the details of whether this happens during Gargano's match with Almas. Does it happen afterwards? And if it does happen afterwards, does Gargano have the title or not? And so on and so forth. But it's inevitable at this point. And I would think that we're all on the same page that, you know, they've done a pretty good job of keeping this exciting. It doesn't feel like I was excited about it then, but he got injured and I don't care anymore. I really want to see this.
Yeah, and Gargano's in the right place on the card for this to happen. I mean, all the pieces are in place for this to add so much to a couple of different possible matches that are coming up. Harley on TM61 or Ciampa?
TM61 ought to be a great addition to the tag roster, and definitely think we're going to get Ciampa versus Gargano in a big match, take over WrestleMania weekend.
Yep, that's what I'm hoping for, and I don't know how that doesn't happen. I don't know if that'll be for the championship. I personally think that he's going to cost him the championship, and Almas is going to run in with it for a little while, because I feel like, I don't remember which one of you said it before the show started recording, but I feel like that title doesn't necessarily, or that match doesn't need the title to be as big as that it can be, and I feel like that kind of frustration really works well for Gargano in this particular feud. But
for sure. Agreed. The title could almost take away from it in this case.
Yeah, I feel the same. I do want to call out one last thing from the original content. Zelina Vega with this awesome line: just because Johnny Gargano outlasted 7 other incompetent men doesn't mean he's worth our time. I love her so much, you guys.
She's great.
She's so mean. That was just a line I had to write down, because it's such a great heel line that a lot of, I don't know. I feel like this is an old school manager who's doing a really good job, and she's only going to get better doing this. So, all right, Zelina, that's my weekly.
Here's a question for me, from me rather.
Okay.
Do we think she's going to wrestle in NXT at any point?
I hope that is not imminent. I just feel like in her role, she's making so much sense right now. Although down the road, do we see her in a mixed tag team match? Absolutely. Like, have somebody on the other side, and she obviously doesn't want to be in it, but you know, she's maybe irritated the GM so much that the GM is like, no, you're in this match. So I don't know, is she a trained wrestler? I actually don't know.
Yeah, she is.
She was Thea Trinidad in, was it TNA?
Yeah, and
TNA is like my blind spot in wrestling. I never really watched it.
Yeah, and they did show her. They had her do a hurricanrana or a head scissors takedown against one of those guys, and sent him into the ring steps. So they have revealed to the audience that she knows how to hit a move or two, and it's not like, you know, a clothesline or a punch that any Jamoke could do.
I do remember that now. I just didn't remember. Yeah, hey, like I said, TNA is not where I watch. I watch Ring of Honor sometimes. I watch a lot of Chikara, actually, because it's beautifully weird. And some New Japan, so just haven't really gotten to see any of her work. But,
yeah, I'm not familiar with her. I don't know if I've actually seen her wrestle either, but I know when I heard she had signed, I assumed it was as a wrestler. And when she came out as a manager, that I was actually surprised by that development.
Right. And she, I want to say this is before she signed, but she filmed her role. I think she's actually playing AJ Lee in Fighting With My Family. I don't think she's the stunt double for another actress. I think she's actually playing her.
That's incredible. That's great. Weird piece of trivia. I'll definitely see that. All right, we're going to move on to our awards of the year. And we're going to start with Best Feuds. So we'll have a chance maybe to talk about DIY here. But we've got a few different things. So for the Best Feuds, I'm going to start with Justin on this one.
All right, so Best Feud, I've got Aleister Black versus Velveteen Dream.
So do I. I just get that out of the way. Yep.
You know what? While I thought this was an outstanding match that it culminated in, I thought there was a couple other matches that edged it out in terms of quality, but the build had me hooked like nothing else I've seen in a very long time. In NXT, I was just really impressed with the build, and it had me buying in completely. They took a gimmick in both Aleister Black and Velveteen Dream that I thought both of them were kind of okay, maybe. In Velveteen Dream, I really objected to certain aspects of it, and just I bought into them. I loved it.
Yeah. Since I picked this feud also, I'm just going to add, without this build, this match was good. It was a very good match, but because of the build, I was so much more emotionally invested. This is one of three or four true mark out matches for me of the year, because I'm fairly jaded at this point. I don't get as emotionally invested as I used to and as I wish I still did all the time. I just don't, but this one had me just on the edge of my seat, and I didn't know exactly what I wanted. I think I was with Dream, but I just was so into the feud, and I actually found myself caring if Aleister Black said his name. Like, I actually cared. And that's just, this is what I want wrestling to be. It's weird, and it's fun, and it made me feel something.
I almost feel like Dream can come out of injury playing a babyface now because of this match.
He could. I just don't know if he should. I'm so afraid that he becomes a novelty, silly act if he
Orlando Jones.
Face. Yeah, I just I hope Jordan Orlando Jones.
Jordan
Jones is an actor. But Orlando Jones is an actor. He was the crack addict on Office Space. I don't know. He probably could do it, and it would probably be fine. I just hope we get to see his heel act a little while longer.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
Harley, your feud of the year.
First off, I wholeheartedly agree with everything you guys said, and I had Black vs. Dream penciled in initially as my pick for this category. The only reason I decided to move away from it was because it was only a one-match feud and only lasted for 2 months. I felt like feud of the year, I need to go with something that lasted a bit longer, that had more of a length to it. And so I went with DIY versus the Authors of Pain.
That's only one. It's on my short list.
Yep. Yeah, they feuded for probably half the year, I want to say, right from, I think, January through to June. And they had many great matches. They had a great match with each other, just no strings attached. Then they had the triple threat with the Revival. Then they had a ladder match, just the two teams with each other. Each one was great in its own way. And similar to what you guys said about Dream and Black, it really changed my perception of the Authors of Pain. Before then, I was kind of, these guys are okay. Like, they're, you know, they're big men. They don't talk. They do the typical big man moves. I'm not a big man guy, historically speaking. But in those matches, I really came around on the Authors to the point where I'm a fan of them now, and I'm sold on them. I was already sold on Ciampa and Gargano before that, so yeah. That just further.
But it also
raised my, not my credibility, it raised my belief that they have a future ahead of them.
Yeah.
I can't talk. No. I liked Gargano and Ciampa, but I was afraid of what the ceiling might be for them in NXT and in WWE.
Oh yeah.
And those matches helped elevate them higher on the card than where I was worried they might get stuck.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there too, because that was a fair thing to worry about at the time. I think a lot of people thought, well, these guys are going to be on 205 Live with no characters by, you know, 3 months from now, and that's not where we've gone. We've got them at the top of the card down there. Now they still might end up on 205 Live, but at least we've got something to latch onto with these guys. Tom, your feud of the year.
Well, since my number one was also Black versus Dream, I could go with my number two, although it involves two guys that, when you think about the best things in NXT in 2017, I have a feeling we're going to be talking about them a lot later. So if you don't mind, I'll just add a couple points to Black versus Dream.
That sounds good.
I just from that live tapings perspective, I, just like a lot of us and many other people, am really into what Velveteen Dream has become and what he's, you know, where he seems to be going. And I get really excited every time he comes out or just shows up at ringside like he did so many times in this feud. But the reactions live at Full Sail anyway just haven't been there as much. And I don't know if people just don't know how to accept him, or if they're still thinking about when Patrick Clark was sort of doing the Patriot thing, or thinking that Velveteen Dream is still too rooted in just being a blatant Prince ripoff or whatever it may be. But it was just so great to hear the reactions that he was getting at the TakeOver War Games. I loved that he was hearing that appreciation for him. I'm not sure what the reactions are like at the live events. But I guess the other detail that I would add that I found really interesting is that I think we'd all agree that we got some not homoerotic, but like just sort of like maybe like bi-curious undertones in the storyline that Velveteen Dream it wasn't much more, but there was more that happened at the taping that didn't make air, where it was the first encounter, which oddly enough started with Aleister Black coming out and saying that he wanted to challenge Drew McIntyre, which also didn't make air. They just aired him talking about his past as a wrestler and how he came to NXT before Velveteen Dream interrupted him. But to end the segment, Velveteen Dream spent that much more time looking like he was really trying to kiss Aleister Black or get Aleister Black to kiss him. And they may have shown a little bit of that on air, but definitely not as much as occurred live. So yeah, I just thought I would point that out.
Interesting. It doesn't feel like they're going to go that way, that they're just going to keep him whatever they're doing with him, and keep that kind of secret, sort of sort of Goldust it. Don't say it.
Exactly.
Don't say
yes. Coming out of that taping, that was the exact thing that I was saying, was that he reminded me a lot of early Goldust. And clearly they did it live to a certain extent and then just sort of pulled back on it. But that it didn't really hurt the feud, because obviously it's still three of our number ones.
And the trick with this thing, and I did see some undertones on there. It's like, why does Dream want Black to acknowledge him so badly? And something that I've been very grateful for, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, is that the announcers have backed off of mentioning this oozing of sexuality plus ambiguous sexuality of Velveteen Dream. Right, they backed off of that because, you know, it is 2017, and the fact that he's got this outside of, you know, kind of outside of a mainstream sexual presentation, that in and of itself should not make him a heel. Just like, you know, somebody being from another country should not make them a heel.
Right.
It's what they do with it. For example, you know, Dream can be as not heterosexual as he wants to be. That's fine. It's if he tries to force his attentions on Aleister Black, that makes you a heel. Just like you can be from another country, that's fine, but don't dump on the United States just because you're from another country. Right. That's
right.
When you become a
right.
heel.
At first, it made me wonder, like, what does Dream know about Black that Black isn't letting us know? And is he trying to force him out of the closet against his will is sort of where I thought it was going.
That would be a fascinating storyline.
Yep.
That would be absolutely, yeah. And I think that they are handling this surprisingly tastefully for WWE.
Yeah. It seems like there's a lot more nuance and a lot in the NXT brand that whatever it is, it's that they're not playing to the average fan all over the country. I don't know. It just seems like there's always been a little more nuance to their storylines there. All right, so we're going to go to tag match. We're going to do best tag match and tag team of the year at once, because I don't want to throw this around the horn too many times if I can avoid it. But tag match and tag team of the year, cover both. Harley.
All right. Am I doing my personal tag match or ours? Collective.
I think the collective stuff we can keep for the end when we do match of the year. But go ahead with your personal tag match and your personal tag team of the year.
Okay. I don't... sorry. Edit all this out. Tag team of the year. I'm going to go with the Authors of Pain. I mentioned a little bit before about how I was really won over by them this year. They held the championships for most of the year, and they really showed some diversity, I think. We saw them in the ring with the Revival. We saw them in the ring with DIY. And it reached the point where I was excited. I'm looking forward to the matches. There's a possibility of them versus Fish and O'Reilly in the near future. And I'm looking forward to it in a way that I don't necessarily look forward to a lot of tag team matchups on paper, we'll say.
Yeah. Tom, your tag team and match of the year.
Well, my first thought was to go with the Street Profits, just because I know they haven't been in the title scene and they've only done enhancement matches, but I really feel like they have tapped into something that is really connecting with the live audiences right now. And I guess I thought about it enough that I still wanted to at least mention it. But I'm going to go with DIY. And even though they broke up partway through the year, as we discussed, that the through lines are still there. And they were just so damn good together. And that's a very simple way to put it. But even in the video packages they were showing tonight in the best of, I'm just watching just the littlest things that Ciampa will do with, like, bridging into a roll-up pin, and I'm just like, damn, these guys are just so damn good together, or even individually, as we saw in the Cruiserweight Classic.
That was dynamite.
So good. So, and the reason that I really want to highlight them this year as opposed to last year when they really flew on the NXT scene is because, and I know I am probably going to sound like a heathen saying this because the tag matches, especially the ones they had with the Revival, were so revered. I honestly was getting pretty exhausted of the NXT tag match formula with so many false finishes and pinfall breakups, and it just felt like every match was so similar, and it just wasn't working for me. I wasn't hating what I was seeing, but it wasn't my favorite thing on the card. And I liked that when the Authors of Pain was injected into the scene, I can't say I'm as sold on them as Harley is, or some others may be at this point. I feel like my favorite thing about them is just that Paul Ellering is there giving them some credibility. But the fact that AOP works such a different style than the Revival or TM61 or Buddy Murphy and
right. Wesley Blake is his name, but yeah.
Thank you, and I feel bad because I actually really like him as a heel, and I can never remember his damn name. they injected something different that showed us some other levels that teams like DIY could go to.
All right, Justin James.
I picked DIY. It was a coin flip between DIY and Authors of Pain. It really was, and I had to choose DIY because their breakup was so emotionally impactful. The best thing they did as a team was end that team, and that is an incredible statement when you think about it.
Yeah, definitely our barbershop window moment of the year.
Exactly.
I did also pick the Authors of Pain. Looking back on all the matches that were there, every match that I would pick that would be near the top of my tag team list, they all involved the Authors. And this was shocking to me. Like, and maybe I'm affected by the fact that my expectations for them are different than my expectations for DIY. But I really, when the Authors started out, I was like, oh, these guys are going to be tedious as hell. And when I felt that the second tournament, the Dusty tournament, it was all clearly just created for these guys to go over, and their matches were fine, and the final match with TM61 was good-ish, but gosh, they really got it together, and they can work this style where they're highlighting their monsters and working with faces and heels alike, and kind of almost sort of portraying a tweener role, and it's just all mm-hmm. working really well, and I hope it continues to work well. I do also want to say about DIY, what is so impressive about them is that when they got together, I think a lot of us thought, gosh, what a lame consolation prize. They couldn't find anything for these guys as singles, so they just wedge them together, and now they're just going to job them out to everybody. Like, how little we knew at that moment how big this team was going to be in such a small blip on the radar. They existed for such a short time. It's weird to me that DIY isn't going to exist on the main roster, but it doesn't seem like they are.
Not initially, at least. You never know down the line.
Right. They might. And do they talk about that when they – yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
That's back to our conversation last week about how, you know, things that worked in NXT because they had 3, 6, 12 months of build,
yep.
You don't play to the main roster and see success.
Right. Yeah, and you can't assume everybody saw it. You've got to do packages on that if you want to really get that over before something happens with that. So let's see some stats for tag teams. Harley,
did we miss the tag team matches of the year?
We kind of did. Oh, you know what? We sort of were supposed to do them at the same time, and we didn't. We didn't. Okay, so my tag team of the match, tag team match of the year, since I was talking already, is the three-way with Authors, Revival, and DIY. This was the hardest I've marked out for a match in a long time, and I hate that term, I shouldn't use it, but it was the hardest, the most invested in a match I had gotten in a very long time, because I truly didn't know who was going to win. It didn't seem like it would be the Revival. I didn't think they were going to do title reign number 3, but I really didn't know how it was going to go. And when they started, when DIY and Revival started working together, because they had to, and they started doing their finishes with the opposite, with a partner from the opposite side, I was losing it. I was just absolutely losing it. And I know these tag team matches have, and I feel Tom when he's saying this thing about the formula, like they're, every tag team title match on TakeOver has been at least good, every single one. And many of them have been awesome, but we do see a lot of the false finish, this is awesome. But this one here, I couldn't construct it more beautifully. So tag match of the year, Tom.
Yeah, that was mine as well. And honestly, I won't even go on too long because you nailed it and just added to everything that I said about why DIY is my team of the year. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Justin?
The only reason why I'm not agreeing with you guys is because even though I thought that was a better match than DIY versus Author of Pain at TakeOver Brooklyn, I thought that the split up of DIY was so impactful that it made that match a better match overall. You know, if I include things that happened after the match, TakeOver Brooklyn, that match was beating it.
Yeah, that was that actually would have been my next, and did show up on my top five overall for the year. And I know so much of it was because of that raw emotion. Harley, tag team match of the year.
I'm just thirding everything you and Tom already said.
All right, sounds good.
The triple threat was terrific. The moments where you got like Wilder and Ciampa teaming up to do the revivals move, and then you got Dawson and Gargano teaming up to do Shatter Machine was just beautiful.
Yep. Oh yeah. Oh boy, I'm gonna watch that again after we after we do this one. Go ahead with those stats for the best tag records of the year.
Yeah. So I should preface by explaining these are based just on television and TakeOver. House shows, non-televised live events are not included. The easy explanation for that is oftentimes house shows are considered sort of out of continuity by WWE standards. And the second part would be because this is a podcast about NXT television and TakeOver for the most part. So that's what's relevant to us.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
So, in that respect, the tag teams with the five best televised records in 2017. Fifth place goes to your former tag champion, Sanity, with 4 wins, 2 losses, and 1 no contest. Fourth place goes to Heavy Machinery with 7 wins and 2 losses. Coming in at third is the Authors of Pain with 8 wins, 1 loss, and 2 no contests. Second, this is kind of a tough one, but it's Fish and O'Reilly technically with 2 wins and no losses.
Okay.
I feel bad ranking them so much higher than the others when they've only had 2 matches as a tag team on television, but they're technically speaking undefeated. But not nearly as undefeated as our number one tag team of the year, Street Profits, who are 7-0 on television.
Watch out, Asuka.
There we go. Only so that's the thing. I know, 77 more to go. A whole lot more.
So I know for the record, Street Profits have lost some matches on house shows. But as far as television goes, we've yet to see them lose if you're just watching television. And I think that's very notable for their characters going forward. I wouldn't be surprised if they're described as undefeated the next time we see them on television.
Oh, yeah. Well, we definitely had the undefeated Ember Moon going up against Asuka, and I had in person seen her lose to Asuka. So, you know, you do what you can when you're not on TV. If it's not on TV, it's not really happening. So.
Yes, and that's what... So that's where my stats are coming from.
All right.
Do you know who they lost to at the house shows? I'm just guessing Riddick and Sabatelli, but...
I think it was Fish and O'Reilly.
Oh, okay. All right. I can accept that.
Yeah, because they obviously need to win more.
Right. All right, best and worst call-up. This is for people being called up to the main roster. And I said, hey, whatever criteria you want to use here, my own best is actually based on expectation versus reality. So best and worst call-up. Justin, go ahead.
Best call-up, I'm going to go with Samoa Joe. I just think he's achieved more. He's been booked the strongest. He's looked the greatest. Worst call-up... This is like such a cop out. The women.
Okay. Yeah.
Not including Asuka. Yeah. The six ladies they just brought up. You know, well, five, because Paige was a return. You know, the five ladies they just brought up and booked in these mirror stables with mirror storylines, as if we don't watch SmackDown and Raw. Just.
I considered Ruby myself for this just because it seemed so odd that they worked on making her cool and relatable and this punk rock chick that was like somebody you got behind. And then they said, you know what, let's have her be the leader of a heel faction. I thought that was a very, very weird move. And so sudden.
But at least punk rock people can be mean or something. Liv Morgan in a heel stable?
I know. That was a really odd use of her. Was it somebody I didn't expect to see up
wasn't
there.
Wasn't she like...
She's just the Jersey happy dancey girl, is what she
was. Yeah, she's the Alexa Bliss before the heel turn.
Right. Not quite as much of a pixie, but close enough.
Yeah.
All right, best and worst call-ups, Harley.
All right, my pick for best, similar to, I think I used the same criteria as Kelly, and I went with the Drifter, Elias.
So did I.
Nice.
Specifically because, he's kind of following in Baron Corbin and Alexa Bliss, where he was good in NXT, or he had potential, but he wasn't, I don't know, he was never quite the top person in his division, never really made a big splash in NXT. But on Raw, he's really turning the tide and changing things around here. He's really being treated like a top contender. And, you know, if things were shuffled in a certain way, he could be a dark horse pick to win the Royal Rumble. That's how well he's been treated on Raw, I think.
All right, Tom.
And Harley, do you have a worst?
Oh, sure. I suppose. Right.
Yeah. I actually really like this category, so I'm just curious.
If I have to talk smack, I'm seconding Justin. My pick for the worst call-up was more specifically the Riot Squad. Absolution is doing a bit better, I feel, of the two stables. Liv Morgan is just, I don't know, she always came across to me as Carmella Jr., and now that she's on the same show as Carmella, I feel it's going to be even worse. Ruby, you guys already covered everything with Ruby. Sarah Logan only made a handful of appearances on NXT television, but I liked her potential. I thought she had a cool look, and I remember she's really liking awesome. Her match in the Mae Young Classic and that. But I watch SmackDown every week, and I don't remember her doing anything since she's been on the main roster. I remember she had a couple of really awkward promos that were just like really cartoonish and like Saturday morning villain, but I don't remember her doing anything in the ring that's impressed me. And that's
she scored a pinfall last night. I forget who she pinned. Tamina, maybe.
There you go. You forget already, and it was last night.
Yeah.
All right, Tom. Best and worst call-ups.
I did consider Samoa Joe because I would agree that he's had a very, very good year. Although thinking just subjectively, thinking more specifically on the effectiveness of the call-up itself, it was a big deal for me that they, and I'm sure with so many others, you know, pick your favorite, that they called up Asuka with enough emphasis and gravitas and everything. And I thought that the video packages leading up to her debut were perfect, like just spot on, and I loved that they continued it even after her debut. There's the detail that she went sort of even Steven with Emma. That honestly didn't bother me all that much, although maybe it's just sort of that weird, like I actually loved their match from TakeOver London in 2015, and yep. so I still held Emma in a high enough esteem, even though she'd just been losing like crazy. So I didn't mind them going 50-50, or maybe even Emma got more of the offense in. I thought it was a fine in-ring debut, but just the presentation of it. And I loved it for maybe a month before going into the commercial break, before Asuka would come out, they would say Asuka up next. And it just made me know, like, oh, okay, I'm not taking a bathroom break or going to the kitchen right now. I'm sitting right here so I don't miss Asuka. So I've been very impressed with that. And for worst, we're all echoing each other here. I'll get a little bit more specific than just saying Riot Squad and say Sarah Logan specifically. And I think a lot of the times we would pick a worst call-up based on someone that we liked that didn't get called up the way we might have envisioned. Of course, I don't think any of us were predicting Sarah Logan would go up so quickly, or go over, as we're supposed to be saying now. But she was just so effective as a babyface, and I'm really glad that I got to see her at a house show, because I'd only seen her on the Mae Young Classic. And at this house show, you could see people in the audience that were like, who's that? And then by the end of the match, they were going crazy for her because she's so good at getting people on her side. And she's just got that fun, yeah, maybe skews a little too close to Becky Lynch type personality. But it's no worse than Liv Morgan skewing too close to Carmella. And I'm not going to point out Liv Morgan because I actually, even though we haven't seen much happen with it yet, I actually like, in theory, her going heel, because when she was a babyface, she would just kill the crowd. Like, maybe there were like a few spare people here and there that were really into Liv Morgan because maybe they know her personally or something. But it was just like a crowd-killing match every time she would come out to do her little babyface act against Aliyah or whoever she was wrestling. So I'm giving her a chance as a heel for now. Sarah, it just seems bizarre to turn her heel, or not necessarily turn, but call her up as a heel. And boy, yeah, just Harley, you mentioned those promos. They have been bad. It's just, and all of this on top of the fact that, yeah, the Riot Squad was basically a photocopy of Absolution, or the other way around, but they just had the disadvantage of showing up second. So it's just not been great for Sarah Logan so far.
Right. Yep. And she was mine because of, I really thought that it would make sense for her to come up as a babyface. It just seemed these factions were the laziest of ideas. Like, even one of them, I would have thought, was like, well, couldn't they have done something, like, gotten them over in a different way? But if they both do three at a time and that's all they could think of, I just wonder what the order of operations here was. Because it can't be that one person said, all right, three woman heel stables, on one on each show. Like, that couldn't have been planned by one person. They had to, like, put up these people here and these people here, and it happens organically, and then suddenly you find out, oh my god, we're doing the same thing on both shows. Like, I hope that was an accidental thing.
But isn't that Vince McMahon's job? Like, or Stephanie McMahon? They're supposed to be the ones overseeing.
Oh yeah, somebody's got to oversee that. So somebody definitely dropped the ball. I'm just saying, I hope somebody didn't pitch that initially do the same thing. I don't know. And then of course Elias, I liked him a little better than the Full Sail crowd, who was all drift away and it felt like go away heat at times. I thought he was fine, and when he got called up after that, he was in that Loser Leaves Town match with Cassius Ohno, and I was like, as I joked on the torch, I said loser gets promoted match. He was in that match, and I just knew that he was going up, and I thought, you know, this might actually work a tiny bit better on the main roster. And, like, little did I had no idea to what degree this would work, where he was working with John Cena, and he didn't look out of place, really, in that match. I thought he did a great job, so, been good for Elias. We're going to go on to... Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was very high on Elias when he was in NXT.
Yeah, you were on top of that one, man, because it took me a while. It took me a while to care about Elias, and then I thought, by the end, I thought, gosh, he might have something here. Maybe.
I miss Sasha Banks, but I got Elias.
All right. So Best Women's Match and Female of the Year. We'll try to do these at the same time. Go ahead, Thomas.
I suspect there's going to be a lot of overlap.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too. I think, you know, in that case, feel free to chime in if we are absolutely correct here, because I'm not sure there's another choice for Woman of the Year. It would almost certainly have to be Asuka. If 2016 wasn't, which it probably was as well, 2017 was absolutely the year of Asuka. And we even got to see a couple of extra dimensions from her when she did sort of that pseudo heel turn a little bit around, I want to say it was summertime, when we saw her use the ref to get an upper hand on Ember, and then she started cutting the poolside promos about how she is the sun and we got to see those replayed in the show tonight. So nice little reminder there. But I mean, shoot, what else needs to be said? It was the year of Asuka, to the point where I don't think anyone else can really even be considered for this spot. And I would throw out there that my favorite women's match was her match with Ember at Brooklyn 3. We talked about Ember earlier, and she didn't excite me too much, but I still felt, I don't know, going into the match, I really felt like Asuka was going to lose. And because of that, every pinfall had me on the proverbial edge of my seat. And as I'll probably end up repeating episode after episode, I really get into the narrative of matches more than, say, the work rate or what have you. And I try to, especially thinking back on like what were our favorite matches of the year, what I try to think about is where I was and what I was thinking when I was actually watching it live. And that one had me because I really was buying into every single move that they were doing.
All right. I'm just going to go ahead and agree here with the Asuka thing, because I don't want to. Yeah, we could go long. And I can't say anything about Asuka that isn't already going to be said. Absolutely adore her. I've adored her since her debut, and so I'll just power through and go straight to Justin here.
I'll say I came mighty close to listing Nikki Cross, just because I think she's a really powerful character. But yeah, Asuka. Let's be realistic here. For the match of the year, women's, all these matches blended together to me. And part of that was due to the lack of variety in opponents for Asuka and the fact that I didn't believe that anybody could actually beat Asuka. But I chose Asuka versus Nikki Cross in their last women's standing match, just because I thought it was a good, hard-hitting match and they had some memorable spots.
Yeah, that was a good choice.
And I honestly had no belief whatsoever that Ember Moon was going to come anywhere near beating Asuka.
I didn't that time. The second time they wrestled, and I get these takeovers mixed up all the time. That's where I thought Ember might beat her. But for the most part, it seemed like they had to do all these samey multi-woman matches because that's the only way they could get you to think, well, she could lose because she's super protected. And so that's where I thought it could happen. When they had, I'm going to call out, of those multi-women matches, the one that I really liked was in San Antonio with Nikki, Peyton, and Billy. And that one worked because Peyton and Billy didn't do the really super obvious, we're a team, but then we're going to break up each other's pins. Billy just like deferred to Peyton and tried to get Peyton the title. And I thought, gosh, you've got Billy helping Peyton, and then and Asuka, the only face in the match at the time, I thought, this is the perfect time to get the belt off her in a way that doesn't hurt her at all. But that when that didn't happen, it was very hard for me to take any of the matches seriously. Harley, best woman in the company and match of the year.
Woman of the year, obviously Asuka by a long mile, despite my love for Ember. Match of the year, Asuka versus Ember at Brooklyn 3 for all the same reasons Tom said. I went into the match with the timing, with being SummerSlam, we all had the feeling Asuka was probably getting called up soon, so it seemed likely that Ember would be the one to end her streak. So yeah, all the near falls, really good in that match. And I specifically remember that was Ember coming out of that long streak of the really mopey Sad Sack promos. And so even as an Ember Moon fan, it was really hard for me to be invested in her going into that match. I thought they've ruined her. She's not a good character anymore. But halfway through the match, I could see the crowd turn and become a fan of hers again, based just on the quality of the match itself.
All right, now we've got some stats for wins. This is going to be the least surprising finale to a countdown that we have all night.
All right, but hopefully the rest is kind of surprising, because our top five best women's records in 2017 at number five is Peyton Royce with six wins and five losses. That's right. She's just barely above 500, and she still made it into the top five records of the year.
All right.
At number four is Sonya Deville with five wins and two losses. In third is our current champion, Ember Moon, 12 wins and two losses. Those two aforementioned matches with Asuka. In second place is newcomer Kairi Sane with three wins, no losses. And first place is our ex-champion Asuka with seven wins, no losses, and one no contest.
Oh, yeah.
Technically speaking, Asuka did have a match in NXT that she didn't win.
She didn't win, yep. But didn't break the streak.
Yeah.
All right. Good to know. Peyton being on that is a real testament to how they booked the women this year. Okay.
Well, I'll mention her tag partner, Billy Kay, worst women's record of the year at no wins and five losses.
Yeah. Okay, they used Kay to keep Peyton strong, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it looked like that was going to be the opposite when they first started the iconic duo, but here we are. The tables turned. Breakout stars in NXT is next. We'll just throw out one. I know, obviously, in a place like NXT, you're going to have a lot of choices. But we'll just do one. Justin, let's start with you.
Breakout star? Now, just because I wasn't quite sure what we meant by this, I should have asked. By breakout star, do we mean a brand new newcomer or somebody who just had a year where they just planted their flag and made their mark?
Oh, I feel like I'm comfortable with either here.
All right.
Yeah, I took it to mean somebody who stepped up big time this year.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
All right. Aleister Black.
All right.
Sure.
Sure. I will be talking about him at some point, too. I'm going to take his opponent, the Velveteen Dream, because he was kicking around as Patrick Clark, just kind of doing a very bland sort of... His act just didn't grab me when he was
my number two
early on. These really do feel like... We didn't see Aleister Black in the company before this year, and I think that is part of why I didn't really think about him here. But Velveteen Dream just seems like his act got so refined in such a small amount of time.
Oh, yes.
He wasn't as committed as I wanted him to be at the beginning. I was like, this could be fun if he was really into it. And 3 weeks later, I'm like, oh, this is fun now. This is absolutely fun now. Harley, breakout star in NXT.
Velveteen was my breakout star. Again, I scratched him at the last minute simply because of a 2-second video clip on tonight's episode that reminded me, God damn, I love Oni Lorcan.
Nice.
He is awesome.
That guy, he doesn't
win.
I do
like Oni. Yeah.
He doesn't win singles matches. He's got a tag team with Danny Burch, and they lost their first two matches. But still, there's just something about him. Every time his music hits and he comes out, I get excited. I don't care if he's going to lose in 30 seconds. I'm looking forward to that 30 seconds. I'm looking forward to seeing him compete. I'm looking forward to him doing those big slaps across the guy's face and neck and chest. He might be my overall favorite guy in NXT right now. And I don't know. I mean, I do know what it is. It's everything I just said.
He works stiff, man. I like him too. I really like him too. And I hope there are wins on the horizon for Oni. Tom.
That almost left field pick makes me feel a little bit better that none of us went with Gargano. He was my number two, just because I haven't seen Full Sail light up like that, you know, since Sami Zayn, I think. But I'm going with one that, per my criteria, there wasn't really another choice, but some other people might think this is an odd choice. I'm going with Drew McIntyre. Obviously, we all knew who he was. And even people that pay more attention to certain independent promotions knew about his reinvention before he came to NXT. But speaking for myself, even when he showed up at ringside at, TakeOver Orlando, I was thinking like, oh, do we have to go through this with this guy? Like, we've been there. He didn't make it. I don't know. I know he's been reinventing himself on the Drew Galloway, blah, blah, blah. But he burst onto my scene in a way that, you know, I ended 2017 thinking that this is the next guy for the main roster. This is the one who's going to be up there with Roman Reigns. You know, he has the potential, if they wanted to strap that rocket to him, just the way that he commands a room, the way that he commands the microphone. I will admit that in 2017, 2018, I don't really know what the phrase "be a man" means, and he says that a lot. But other than that, I'm just super, super high on Drew McIntyre right now, and 2017 was the year where he broke out and showed that to me. So that's why I had to pick him.
And there's a reason why I asked for that clarification, because Drew McIntyre was somebody I came close to picking here.
Cool.
Great. All right, so we got – you got it both ways. You got the other guy you wanted to pick too, so works out. All right, so we have a couple more fun stat lists here. I cringe a little when I ask worst records, Harley.
Yes. This could go a couple different ways. I stuck with just, you know, your standard worst of the worst. I already mentioned in first place – one half of the iconic duo is Billy Kay with no wins, 5 losses. Nobody lost more than Billy on television in 2017. However, close behind her, second place goes to Raul Mendoza with no wins and 4 losses.
He can work. I hope there's time
I know.
For him too. Yeah.
Every time I see him lose, I say I love this guy.
Well, and then third place is actually a 4-way tie with representatives from each division. In the tag division, with no wins and 3 losses, it's Gabriel and Uriel, the Ely brothers.
Oh, I forgot about them.
Also with no wins and 3 losses, in the men's division, it's Kona Reeves.
I was thinking of him. Yep.
I was thinking of Fabian Eichner.
And in the women's division, tied at no wins and 3 losses, it's Lacey Evans, the pinup marine feminist 50s housewife.
Yeah, whatever the hell she is.
Tied with the former genie in a bottle, Aaliyah, also no wins and 3 losses.
They really call her genie in a bottle?
Yeah, she was doing a genie gimmick. I think it was on Breaking Ground. She was testing out that. Yeah. She's like, you know, I'm of Persian descent, so I'll be a genie.
I was going to say, that sounds vaguely racist to me.
Yeah, luckily she didn't fall through with it.
Seems like the first thing that an old school wrestling promoter would pitch you, and you're like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Let's But she tried it. All right, we've got most appearances. This is a list I'm really looking forward to.
Right. So here's a stat that I really like. You know, you got 52 weeks of television in a standard year, and we had 5 takeovers in 2017. So you have a potential of 57 appearances. That's how this works. And so it's very telling to me who appears on the most episodes, who's getting the most face time per week. And as far as this category goes, it's an original appearance on an episode or a takeover. So it could include a match, a promo, a backstage interview, a vignette, but not, say, not a video package recapping what happened last week. It has to be some sort of original content. So in 9th and 10th place, it's Akam and Rezar, the authors of Pain, who appeared on 32 episodes this year. Tied for 6th place, it is Eric Young, Billy Kay, and Peyton Royce, with 33 appearances each. Just above Eric Young, at 5th place, is Alexander Wolf, with 35 appearances. Above him is Nikki Cross, with 36 appearances. Number 3 on our list is Ember Moon, with 37. Number 2 is Roderick Strong, at 38. And the most appearances of any wrestler on NXT television in 2017, with 39 out of 57 episodes, goes to Killian Dane.
What? What? Oh my gosh.
I know. No, I was suspecting you would not see that coming.
I didn't think that it was going to be Dane.
I knew it wasn't going to be one of the champions, because they like to give their champions a little bit less TV time.
Yeah.
And so I knew it wasn't going to be like McIntyre, Rude, or Asuka.
Yeah. So
like
you'll notice all four members of Sanity were in the top 10.
Yep.
And that's not a coincidence, right? That's definitely part of it, is you might have had a match with EY and Alexander Wolf, and Dane was at ringside.
Right.
Or you might have just had a brief 30-second backstage promo with all four of them hanging out, and Dane says one line. So that's part of the reason why the four of them are so high on the list, is they were able to share screen time even when they weren't themselves in a prominent spot. However, Killian does have 3 more appearances than Nikki, 4 more than Wolf, 6 more than Eric Young. So there is something about him in particular that earned him more screen time this year than anybody else in NXT, or more appearances per episode, I should say.
All right. With that, we move on to Best Men's Match of the Year and Man of the Year. We were joking we were going to call it, but let's just go with Male Superstar of the Year and sound ultra corporate. Whatever you want to call it is fine with me. Go ahead, Justin, tee us off.
Aleister Black.
Me too.
And
ditto.
I mean, the guy's just and I'll say, and I'll be the first to admit, I was wrong about him at first. And I was just like, you know, I'm not seeing the work rate, not run over, cool entrance, where's the promos? The vignettes gave me – that's a word I never pronounce right, by the way.
Vignettes.
Gave me vignettes.
There you go.
The vignettes, thank you. You know, they didn't give me much to latch on to. He's a guy who hangs out in churches. Cool, whatever, dude. I was so underwhelmed, and then after a couple months, just something clicked with his matches, and all of a sudden, I was just like, I was totally on board the Aleister Black train. I was, you know, taking the tickets and shoving the coal in the engine. Big fan of his now. I just can't say enough cool things about Aleister Black. It just blew me away. Now, match of the year for men's, I wanted to put Aleister Black and Velveteen Dream there, but the fact of the matter was, Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate, UK Championship match. Now, we can flip a coin between the one we just saw a couple weeks ago and TakeOver Chicago. Mine landed on the one we saw a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and I feel I'm with you on both. I actually picked the other Bate Dunne match, but I would need to watch them again to be certain. And I also always tend to kind of lean toward that first meeting. If they're both really technically superior and fantastic matches, I tend to go with that. And no, that wasn't the first meeting, but that was a huge stage for both of them, and they greatly outdid what they did in the tournament, which was good also.
Yeah, I always prefer the rubber match, because they'll do the callbacks to the earlier matches.
Yeah, that's, I'm a sucker for that too. But
yeah,
yeah, I would, you know what, I should watch them both again. But yeah, nothing wrong with that. Harley.
Yeah, my man of the year, Aleister Black. I have nothing more to say. You guys have covered it all. And match of the year, I went with Bate versus Dunn, Takeover Chicago. So their second encounter after the UK tournament. Specifically because I remember Bate pulling out a couple moves during that match that I'd never seen before from him or from anybody in any wrestling ring. And that always, that seals it for me. If I've been watching wrestling my whole life, almost, you know, at least 30 years. So if a wrestler can pull out something brand new in the ring that I've never seen before, I'm impressed. I'm sold.
All right. Yeah, no, I've got it. There's those matches. I felt like I hadn't seen anything like it before, and I just, it made me so much more interested in the entire British strong style. It's just, gosh, it's so brutal and mean, and I love it. Tom.
Oh, sorry. One last.
Go ahead.
One last piece of praise I can heap on the match. I have a buddy of mine, an old coworker, doesn't really watch wrestling, and I sat him down and made him watch that match. Because I was just like, days later, I was still thinking about it, and it stole my mind. I was like, hey, I got like, it's 15 minutes. I got a wrestling match I want you to see, sort of thing. And I've never done that before.
Isn't that awesome? I love that. And what was their response?
Yeah, you know, he's watching and he's going, whoa, what the hell? Like, this is this is crazy. This is great. And now he watches every WWE pay-per-view and takeover at my place.
Oh, man, that's so cool.
Awesome. This is
so, there you go.
Nice story. I got, you know. Standing, I'm sitting
ovation. Fan slash non-fan reactions. There was somebody who was sort of like around for a while in the same apartment when I would watch Raw, and he would make sure that he came around every time he heard Neville's music. And I took note. I mean, like, obviously love Neville, but I took note of that. Like, there's something about this guy that appeals to a non-fan. Mm-hmm. So I find that so fascinating. For me, I'll just repeat everything I said about Drew McIntyre for my man of the year, although Aleister Black was on my shortlist. And I fell on the Takeover Chicago side of things for the Pete Dunne-Tyler Bate match. I think the best detail that I can really add to why I liked the match is, you know, like I said earlier, and this is sort of like the exception to that, where I care so much more about a narrative that goes into the match and a story that is told. Not that they, I mean, these guys were telling a story with their physicality, but more of the angle that goes into it. And, you know, there was the tournament that happened, but I still really didn't know much about Bate and Dunne at this point. I was not excited for this match at all, but that didn't end up mattering because they were so good in there. You know, like I said, to a very different degree, but, you know, the Sarah Logan thing I mentioned earlier, people are like, who the heck is this? But by the end of the match, they're going wild for her. With these two, I really was apathetic when they came out. And by the end, I was just like everybody else, just flabbergasted by how damn good the match was.
All right, best men's records stats, Harley.
All right, this one's a little more predictable as well. In fifth place, Velveteen Dream, 7 wins, only the 1 loss. In fourth place, Drew McIntyre, with 9 wins, 1 loss, and 1 no contest. Third place, it's Aleister Black, with 12 wins, and as of last week, 1 loss. Second goes to your UK champion, Pete Dunne, who went 6-0 on television this year. And first place goes to the big man, Lars Sullivan, who is currently 7-0 on television.
What about the tag matches you lost?
Yeah, I don't count tag matches in this category.
Gotcha, because that's what got him his push, was losing tag matches.
When you said when you said Aleister there in third, and I was like, oh, what the hell match did he lose? couldn't remember all the way back to last week when he took that loss.
Yeah.
All right, and then we've got, we'll quickly run through this one since we've covered them all, but you've got the match of the year cumulative by the four of us.
Yeah, sure. So all four of us individually made our own lists for our top five matches of the year. We scored them up. We added them together to put them through the blender and come up with the, what's our show called? PWT Talks NXT.
Who knows? Who cares?
For the guys talking about wrestling, top five matches of the year. Fifth place, our choice was the Authors of Pain versus DIY versus The Revival. Triple threat tag title at TakeOver Orlando. Fourth place, our pick was Asuka versus Ember Moon for the Women's Championship TakeOver Brooklyn 3. Third place went to Pete Dunne versus Tyler Bate on television December 20th. Second place went to Aleister Black versus Velveteen Dream at TakeOver War Games. And first place went, of course, to Pete Dunne versus Tyler Bate for the UK Championship at TakeOver Chicago.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, guys. Good job, you two. I hope you're listening.
I will say the one thing I like about our top five, considering it was all, you know, we each had our own opinions and combined them together, you have four different takeovers and weekly television represented there. And I think that's really telling for the quality of NXT overall, right? It's not like, hey, we had chose three matches from the same takeover special because, oh, that special was really good and the rest of the year was eh. It was like, no, every takeover this year had a match of the year candidate, essentially.
And in the 18 takeovers that they've had, I feel like that's always kind of been true. There has always been something awesome to sink your teeth into.
Yeah, I can't think of a bad takeover yet.
I can think of some that I didn't enjoy that much, but I've never saw a takeover where I said, wow, I hated that, or there wasn't a single good match on there. There's always a great match on there. It just may not always be the main event. You'll notice that we didn't talk about Bobby Roode or Shinsuke Nakamura tonight.
Yeah, and you know, they've been doing their thing on the main roster long enough that I guess I just haven't really thought about him. And Roode has... he has great character work, and he has technically okay matches. And Shinsuke, it just seems like most of his year was about the jump to the main roster, and we're still kind of seeing how that goes. So I adore Shinsuke. It just didn't seem like a big NXT year for him to me, I guess.
Yep.
All right, so we accept emails, and this week we actually remembered what our email address is. It is pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. If you have anything, any egregious errors, anything we missed that we really should have thought of, because there has to be something that we didn't think of, go ahead and spit that out at us. You can also send us questions, things you want us to talk about, whatever you want to do, hate mail, love mail, it's all good. We did get an email this last week that I wanted to cover from a guy named Andrew Gambrill. And so here's his full email. Hey guys, really loving the show so far. I'm curious to get your opinion on who the greatest NXT champion is. I know greatest is subjective, but looking at match quality and overall impact on the brand, my pick would be Finn Balor. NXT seemed to peak during his reign. Also, aside from Almas, who are two or three other guys you think will hold the title in 2018? So, I think this is a fair question and a fairly difficult question.
Or two questions.
I will get my pick for best champion out of the way, and with the giant, giant caveat that I don't think that they've really had a bad title reign. I actually really adored the arc of Neville. I really loved his arc because he began as a face, and he turned during his title reign and started doing whatever it took. He became increasingly protective of that title. And I didn't know if he'd be able to work heel. I remember thinking, well, gosh, he's such a good face. How's he going to be able to work heel? Little did I know that he didn't even show any of the cruelty that he showed on 205 Live. But I just really liked the title reign of Neville. And maybe that's an odd pick because we've had so many good ones. But I would pick Neville. Justin?
It's not an odd pick at all, and the reason I say that is because my pick played off of that. I was torn because my criteria on this is I have always felt that a champion needs to put over the title more than anything else, right? They've got to make the title seem important because why else are we watching this show? And so I was torn between Asuka, who made the title look amazing, but edging her out, Sami Zayn, because – and that had to do with his matches against Neville, you know, where you're saying he got increasingly protective. Sami Zayn got increasingly almost willing to cross that line, where there's that one match where he looked at smashing Neville with the belt.
That was, yes.
He looked at it, and you could tell. He was like, I need this belt. All I have to do is hit him in the face. The referee's not going to see it. And he put it down and won the right way. And you're like, wow, that was amazing. And then later that night, Kevin Owens turning on him, destroying him. And then the matches afterwards, where it ended by referee stoppage after, what was it, 5 pop-up power bombs?
Yeah.
And you just look, I mean, Sami Zayn had one of the shortest, and Harley can confirm this, one of the shortest, if not the shortest.
Yeah. 2 months.
Yeah.
You know, I think maybe Finn Balor or Nakamura had like a quick title flip around, like a 4 week or something, right? But outside of that, Sami Zayn was just about the shortest reigning champion. And it meant so much to everyone to see him get that championship. And it meant so much to everyone the way he lost it. That makes him, you know, even though his win-loss record was atrocious, he held the title. He was absolutely the best NXT champion, in my opinion.
That's so well put, and Sami Zayn was one that I was really considering for all those reasons, and I have such fond memories of watching that TakeOver event. Still, that main event was still one of the best NXT matches I've seen. And just to move chronologically down the list of champions, my ultimate pick after much deliberation was Kevin Owens. And it really plays into a lot of what you said, and just carries it right on over to Owens' reign. And I think the thing that put Owens over the top for me when I was thinking about Neville, but really more thinking about Zayn for the reasons you said. And I think just personally, Owens just resonated with me more. And during his NXT tenure, most of which was spent as champion, he became my favorite wrestler at the time. For all the reasons that anybody loves Kevin Owens, no need to overstate them. So he was my pick, but you phrased everything there so perfectly, Justin.
Thank you.
All right, Harley, can we make it 4 different guys?
No, because I agree with Kelly, and I think Adrian Neville is the best NXT champion. Andrew, our reader who wrote in, or listener, I should say, who wrote in, he said Balor, and Balor's definitely a very good choice. He had the longest title reign out of any NXT champion. But Neville's reign was only 6 days shorter than Finn's, so Neville held it for a good long time, almost a year, I want to say. He was the first champion to kick off the TakeOver era and the era of the live specials. He actually won the title in the very first WWE Network special, NXT Arrival, from Bo Dallas. And Neville was undefeated for most of his reign. So all of those, plus the aforementioned reasons that Kelly pointed out, and I still think Neville is kind of the top dog, as much as I totally love Zayn and Owens.
Yeah. Well, if I had access to all your secret stats, maybe I would pick Neville too.
I think the one thing really working against Balor for me, and I'll preface this by saying, send your hate tweets to @TomSout. I got really tired of his Samoa Joe feud. It felt like it went on forever, and I don't want to say they didn't have chemistry in the ring, but after a while, I just really wasn't looking forward to their endless rematches.
Those matches totally underwhelmed.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. I'm glad I'm not alone there.
I felt the same way too. Yeah, both guys.
Look at their matches. You look at their matches apart from each other. You're like, man, I can't wait for these two to meet. And then they got together. And the one match they had that I thought was really leading to be a really solid match kept getting interrupted because Samoa Joe was busted open.
Right.
All right. Yep, that was, the Let Them Fight the FPG chant that we got that Linda McMahon was so thrilled about. He did also throw out there, who do we think might be the champion in the coming year? I don't know that there are any real obvious ones to me. Everybody that I can come up with, I feel like there are equal reasons why they are not going to get the title. I don't know how long Black is going to be down there. The heels like Cole and Dream, and they're just not in a place right now to hold a title because we got a heel champion. Lars Sullivan, I don't know that he's going to be a guy they rely on to sell tickets and be the top act before he might go up. Is there somebody obvious that I'm forgetting, Tom?
No, you basically covered it. I think, my list had two people, Aleister Black and Cole, and I agree there are just as many reasons why they wouldn't hold the title, and which one I would pick might come into better view as we see how their current feud shapes up. I feel like I would like to see Cole as champion because I always enjoy the champion who just seems like a snivelly little bastard that wants to run away from everybody. But the other choice that I had on my list was a question mark, meaning like maybe it's somebody that isn't signed to NXT yet. And the obvious person is Ricochet. Based on the rumors that I've been reading, versus the rumors that anybody else has been reading, I just don't feel like he's going to end up in NXT, at least not anytime soon. So I hesitate to say that he's going to show up in 2018, and if he does, that he would show up at a title level. But maybe someone else, like a Shane Strickland or somebody?
Yeah, I don't know. I come up with names, but these guys are doing their thing on the indies. You could see Michael Elgin winning a title there, but like, will he ever? He makes so much money on the indies. Who cares?
Right.
I just don't know if that's even in the cards for him. Harley, anybody else?
I did have one name, and it's very much a dark horse. But the way he's been booked lately kind of made me think that they might be doing sort of going the Sami Zayn route with Roderick Strong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some of the way that they've been booking him, I kind of thought maybe they are doing like the long, like you guys just talked about with Sami Zayn, where he keeps trying and he keeps getting close and it means so much to him and he can't quite pull it off. And maybe eventually he does. Maybe sometime take over SummerSlam. He finally gets the shot against Almas and he's the one to make the win. But it's very much a dark horse, and it's gonna take the first couple of tapings of this new year for me to sort of gauge where they're going with him.
Yeah, I think he's gonna have to have at least one great promo before they pull the trigger on that.
Yeah, I think Roddy either gets like the slow build and the super underdog treatment to finally win the belt, or he gets thrown on 205 Live as just a forgotten name and becomes, on par with Brian Kendrick and Tozawa.
Justin James. Justin, you got anybody else for us?
Oh, geez. It's like you guys said. There's people who, you look at the storylines, they should be champion or on the way to being champion, but then you look at who's going to get pulled up and this and that, and you're like, ugh. Right? So I want to see Aleister Black end up with that belt. Does the guy even cut promos? He cut that one really lame-o promo in the suit and he got beat up by...
It's weird watching him rise up out of the fog in that suit.
Yeah, right? And then his other promo was saying, enjoy your infamy, Velveteen Dream. That was his whole second promo.
That works well for him. Just a little bit.
But the champion has to speak a little bit more. They even got Asuka and Shinsuke Nakamura to say some things, and their English wasn't strong. But you don't do that to Black. Dream's a heel, man. I don't know what they do with him. Sullivan, unstoppable force, but I think he's just on a quick call up path.
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's a weird time for NXT.
Yeah, the women's division is so asset stripped right now. I don't know who the women champion contenders are right now. tag teams, highly competitive. I can't call that at all. Street Profits?
Yeah, I think the Street Profits will probably see some time with them.
Well, all right, kids. 2018 good is email. Wide open.
It is. It was. That was a good email. Andrew Gambrill, hope we covered that exhaustively enough for you. That was a question he sent pretty much right after our show, just hours after our show got posted last week. So, yeah, it was. I've been stewing on that one all week, and it's a good one. Again, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. And that's essentially our show. I'm sick right now, guys, and I got through it, but I'm just starting to kind of crash here, so timing, I guess, is good.
Anything this was else our first show as a quartet.
It was, and
probably our last for a while.
Right.
I feel like I'm about to get thrown through the barbershop window next week.
Yep, somebody's got to, and you haven't taken that turn yet, so...
I want to hold the belt forever.
All right, Twitter handles, everybody, and then we'll say goodbye. Harley, go ahead.
I don't have one.
Oh, that's right. Gosh, I got to start remembering that. Tom, I know you said yours briefly.
Yes, at Tom Stout.
Justin.
I am at Justin_M_James.
At Spooky Milk, you can see me retweet stuff that I write on the torch. That is just about it. All right, guys. That was our show. I hope you dug it, and we'll catch you next week with the new set of tapings. Cheers.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject. And it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects, and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is Livecast.